Welcome home. We are WNST, AM 1570, Towson, Baltimore. We are Baltimore Positive. We're back on the grid here this week. We'll be doing the Maryland Crab Cake Tour on Thursday. We'll be at Fadley's in Lexington Market all afternoon for lunchtime. Stop by. Don't sleep on the shrimp salad or the mac and cheese. I mean, the crab cakes are delicious, and I know you're getting one. A little tomatoes, the whole deal. Even the big French fries, a little steak fries they do down there. But we'll see you down at Fadley's. We're going to be doing the Maryland Crab Cake Tour every week through the spring. We're back at Fadley's on the second Oriole game, which is April 2nd. We're going to be at Coco's on April 30th. And I'm still putting together this. Oh, we're at Pizza John's on the 21st of March on a Friday. So we're looking forward to that. So adding places. If you know places, throw me a note. Ness at Baltimore. Positive.com. I know the seasons are colliding here, Luke, because my hate mail's up. When baseball season happens, I get a lot more hate mail. So I don't know why that is, but it is factual. The Justin Tucker thing is out there. The combine is wrapped. We have free agency next week. Can we just do a week of baseball? Can we just do spring training this week? I mean, are they still playing down there in Sarasota, Luke?
Yeah, they are, and there's going to be a game on TV, and there's going to even be some relevance to what we watch. We're going to get our first televised look at Charlie Morton as an Oriole, right? I mean, obviously, someone who's been around a long time, as we've joked about, he's only a month or two younger than me at 41 years old. We're going to get
I
to
saw
see.
him pitch to Gehrig, I'm telling you, back in the day.
You might have. I mean, he's been around for a few
I
minutes.
I bet he's pitched to somebody like Julio Franco that played in the 70s or so. You know, I bet there's something going on there, right?
I don't know if I might not be Julio Franco, but probably someone that you'd be surprised to hear, right? I mean,
well,
he's
that's
been
what we
around for a
always
while.
find out with the veteran
Yeah.
guys. It's like this guy pitched to somebody that Brooks Robinson played. It's crazy, but when 41-year-old guys are still pitching, that's an anomaly. It really
It's
is.
something you don't see very often, and it's something that you hope that Grayson Rodriguez and Dean Kramer and Cade Povich and some of these younger guys in the rotation pick up a thing or two, right? In the same way that you hope that Corbin Burnes instilled some lessons in some of these guys, even though he's now pitching in Arizona. But, you know, we're going to see Charlie Morton. We're going to get our first televised look at Tomoyuki Sugano. I think there's a lot of excitement there. And I think the biggest one, Nestor, and this was confirmed over the weekend, Felix Bautista going to start getting into games. And I think that was something that we were kind of waiting to see when exactly they were going to pitch him in games. And I think there was always a sense of taking a little bit of pause and making sure, okay, if he's only making a spring debut, say March 21st, is he going to be ready for the opener? Well, if he's pitching in early March, assuming no setbacks, assuming he's feeling good, assuming everything is continuing to trend in the right direction, then there's no reason to think he won't be ready for opening day. So I thought that was good news. And obviously, depending on, you know, when we reconvene, we'll see what the performance is like, but definitely some interest. You know, the first couple televised games, you know, we had a chance to see Cade Povich. He pitched well. We've seen Albert Suarez. He has not pitched well early in Grapefruit League. What does it mean right now? I'm unmoved either way. When we're talking about late February and the first week of March, but business does start to pick up, as you mentioned. We're now inside the same month that the Orioles will start playing games for real. So you think about
Well,
it
all the
through
more
that
reason
lens.
that anything that goes wrong now affects opening day. If you get a
It
lat
can,
strain, you
yeah.
get a this, a that. Rodriguez has had the back issue, the shoulder, like whatever it is, you just need to keep. One of these guys isn't going to be ready to pitch in Toronto, right? Like something's going to strain or this or that. It's March. It's where it is. It's got to make sure. I mean, the season went off the rails last year because of injuries. It really did.
It did. And not just the pitching. I mean, the pitching, as we talked about, I mean, the pitching kind of was, it was admirable how they held the pitching staff together, really. It was really the position side, you know, whether we're talking about Westberg being out, you know, they lost Jorge Mateo, so that left them a little less flexible infield wise. Obviously, whatever was going on with Adley Rutschman, which I'll still maintain that there had to be some kind of physical issue, even if that wasn't all of it. There was something going on there for him to be that bad. But yeah, I mean, and right now, I mean, they're dealing with, Westberg's been dealing with a little bit of a lower back soreness. He seems to be okay. You know, he's resuming baseball activities. Gunnar Henderson dealing with a little bit of a side issue. So, you know, we're still three-ish weeks out, right? 3.5 weeks out from opening day. So nothing to sound the alarm about, but certainly, as you alluded to, on the pitching side, if you have someone have a physical issue start to creep up, then yeah, you're starting to worry about opening day. You're starting to worry about, just how effective they're going to be early on in the season. And that to me is why it was so positive to hear that Batista is ready to start throwing in some Grapefruit League games. I think the big thing for him, beyond just how he feels, what's the velocity look like, right? I mean, we're used to a Felix Batista that throws 100. Typically, when you see guys coming back from Tommy John, there's a little bit of a gradual build with the velo coming back, right? I mean, we might see a Batista that's at 96 or 97. And look, that's okay for right now, but you want to see that velocity continue to creep up as he gets some of these more competitive in-game in that environment under his belt, because he hasn't done that since what, late August of 2023. He hasn't thrown a competitive pitch since then. So it does take a little bit of time there, but what we know from Tommy John surgery and guys working their way back, understanding, no, it's not 100%, but it is a very high return rate, much higher than it was 3 or 4 decades ago. But we know that guys typically should get back to the point where their velocity is back to where it was pre-injury form, you hope. So you hope probably not on March 3rd or March 10th, but you hope at some point early in the season we see a Felix Batista that's once again flirting with throwing 100, 101, right? I mean, you're hoping you see that at some point as the year goes on. So, in the meantime, you're not necessarily going to lean on him as hard as you did a couple years ago, but he's certainly going to be in that mix with everyone else. And it's good news, right? I'll feel better about a returning Felix Batista much better than I did about Craig Kimbrell last July. So, we'll see how that plays out, but good to see him back on the field getting into some real games still this early in spring training.
Interesting you bring up the injury thing as a just 101 miles an hour. He's got to hit triple D. I mean, you almost sound like all the rest of them at this point in regard to like what's expected out of these guys. And if the guy's throwing 96 or 97 right now, you're gonna be able to get people out in the big leagues if he's, he doesn't need to throw 103. That's how he blew his arm out to begin with. Like, there's a part of this where 97, 98 ought to be plenty with command. And, I wonder what they want out of a guy like him, what they talk about behind closed doors and say, well, we got a year and a half. I don't have a media credential. I don't talk to these people. I don't talk to doctors. I read what I read. I take a lot of it with a grain of salt because I see it with my eyes, right? If he's back out on the field and he's five appearances in and it's April 23rd, then I judge it. Like, you know what I mean? Like, because that's real baseball. That's April. That's cold weather. That's all of that. That's situational. That's against the Yankees and the Red Sox and against big league hitters. But I wonder when they say he's coming back from Tommy John, because they have all the science, all the charts, all the diet, all they want. Do they really expect him to look just like he looked a year and a half ago? A little different? I mean, he got guys out. He was a great strike zone pitcher, but so much of it was predicated on he throws harder than everybody else by a lot, the hardest anybody's thrown in this organization and all that. I don't know that he has to be that to be effective again. And that's. It concerns me, you're like, you put them back together again. Every time these guys throw a pitch, I think of Dave Dravecki. I think of these, but 50% of the guys in the sport have had a knife and they're out there, on any given night, if the Orioles have four guys in a game, you'd say three out of the four have had surgery of some kind at some point during their career. 'Cause that's just kind of how pitching is at this point. Once you're 25 years old.
Well, and what's wild about that, and I don't know what the exact percentage was. I know there was data taken several years back that kind of estimated that at least a third of professional pitchers had had Tommy John. I'm guessing it's ticking up. But what you have to look at is not just did they have Tommy John in the majors? Did they have it in the minors? Did they have it in college? Did they have it in high school? I mean, you hear about 13 and 14-year-olds having Tommy John surgery. I'm guessing most of those never make it to the majors, but the point
Well,
is,
they act like it's like a vasectomy. You just get fixed and you're good, and
yeah,
you go run off, get a
and I
bag of
will
peas for
say,
the weekend. And
yeah,
it's not, it's that's
it's
not
not
what this
that.
is.
No, and that's why, if you recall, a year ago at this time, who were we talking about? We were talking about Kyle Bradish, and there was a sentiment at that point in time of, well, just have the surgery, that way you're ready for 2025. And look, there's I'm not saying there's no merit to that if someone has a UCL injury and there's no practical path to just rehabbing and resting and recovering and being able to pitch again. I think when you look at a situation like that, when it's, a slight tear and you try to go that route, and you can point to guys that have had UCL sprains. Tanaka for the Yankees famously had a UCL sprain and pitched with it the rest of his career and pitched with it for quite a long time. And we've seen others like that, but those tend to be the exceptions, not the norm. But the point is, we don't want to be that flippant about surgery because even though the return rate is very high, it's not 100%. And we've seen, a case like John Means, for example. I mean, John Means had Tommy John surgery. It's going to be coming up on next month, will be 3 years since John Means had his first Tommy John surgery. Of course, we know he had to have a correction to it last year. And we've seen John Means since then make what, seven, eight starts in the major league since then? I mean, it's, and we're talking about someone who was an all-star, albeit for a really bad Orioles team, but someone who threw a no-hitter 4 years ago, right? So it's, it is something that you want to tread carefully with. And, you make an interesting point talking about, well, how much velocity is enough? That's kind of, I mean, that's a cultural question in baseball right now, right? I mean, that is systemic. And it's not just the, let's be clear. I don't want to sit here and just make the teams the bad guys. The players are into it just as much, right? I mean, these were the guys that 5, 6, 7, 8 years ago, you were hearing about guys going to Driveline or some of these pitching labs on their own to say, hey, I throw 92. I'd really like to be able to throw 95, and that would really change my career. So a lot of these guys did it on their own. And if you talk to these players to a man, and I'm not talking out of turn here. You've even heard guys go on the record saying this, where there have been players saying, you know what? I know that my arm probably can only take so much, and I'll probably have to get Tommy John. And I hope my rotator cuff holds up because returning from something like that is a way different animal. But I also know that this is my way to maximize my earnings. This is my livelihood, that I have a very limited window to earn lucrative money and to carve out a major league career for myself. So I am going to exhaust every avenue. And yes, if that means that I have to get cut on at some point in time, well, that's the cost of doing business. I mean, that's really the culture that's been created. I'm not saying that's good or bad, right? But
Well, it's also
that's
they'll
what you
fix me.
find.
They'll
Yeah,
fix. They
exactly.
can make me better. They can. It's like $6 million
It's
man.
bionic,
You
right?
know,
Yeah,
right.
it really is. I mean, it really is that. And again, I'm not saying that's good. I don't want to celebrate that mindset, but that is the mindset that is pervasive in not just Major League Baseball, but minor league baseball, college baseball. I mean, you see these kids that are 16 years old going to these showcase events, and it's all about how hard can you throw if you're a pitcher. So, we have analytics, we have sports science, we have all this tracking data, we have these super slow-mo HD cameras that can break down your mechanics in a way that only the finest pitching coaches could do 30 years ago, right? It is so scientific now. But that said, the UCL, the ulnar collateral ligament, or talking about these lat strains that guys like Grayson Rodriguez have had, your body can still only take so much if you're not, and some of it is genetics. It's not necessarily that you even have terrible mechanics or anything. Sometimes you just can't take it. You think about the human arm. What did God create the human arm to throw 102 miles per hour? And some people would argue and say, well, they found a way to throw 102 miles per hour. But you say, okay, are you going to hold up when you're throwing 102, but you're also you're torquing the arm in a way to have a nasty slider or nasty sweeper or breaking ball or whatever, and you just think about the strain that puts on your elbow and your shoulder and what that means. So, obviously we're getting it deeper into the weeds here, from a philosophical standpoint. But to go back to your question with Felix Bautista, yeah, if he's throwing 97 to begin the year or 98 to begin the year, assuming his command's there, assuming he's got his secondary pitches, there's no reason to think he can't be effective. But we also know from a physical standpoint and understanding how these pitchers train, how these teams train, how they track release point and arm angle, all those different things, that the goal is for him to get back to a point where he was. Now, there are pitchers who try to refine their mechanics, and that's an ongoing process, right? That's not something that you just have mechanics one way and then you get hurt and oh, you change it. You're constantly tweaking. And with a lot of this tracking data, they can look at guys and see, for example, and this wasn't a Batista thing, but just certain pitchers, you can see that their release point, it starts to change. Their arm angle drops a little bit. A pitcher suddenly is not dropping down to sidearm, but maybe it's a little more three quarters motion. That tends to be a sign that someone's getting a little tired, right? So you hope that with this data, in a big picture, holistic sense, that you're trying to keep pitchers healthy. As I've said to you, the next frontier, if you think back to Moneyball back in the late 90s and early 2000s, and everything that's happened since then, all the different, breakthroughs, and whether they're truly breakthroughs or not, is certainly a lot of these things are cyclical. But I think the next great frontier for teams that, in terms of being successful, in terms of maximizing their assets and protecting their resources, is truly player health. Are there some breakthroughs here to try to, and there's been with surgery, I mean, internal brace is something that's now used in some of these Tommy John UCL correction surgeries that they say helps, expedite the recovery rate, although not as much as maybe advertised at first. But, are there some breakthroughs? Is there some data? Is there some information that can perhaps preserve some of these guys from a UCL standpoint, from an elbow standpoint? The team that does that and can kind of count balance that with keeping the performance at a certain level, boy, they'll be at a big advantage. I mean, think about the Orioles last year. To go bring it back full circle to the Orioles, you talked about it with the injuries. Let's just say the Orioles had Corbin Burnes, Kyle Bradish, kept Grayson Rodriguez healthy. You have those big three. Maybe they had still gotten Zach Eflin. Who knows? And they had that kind of a rotation. I mean, who knows? I mean, maybe their hitting would have been enough, even with the way it was struggling. I don't know. Again, it's tough to say that when they scored one stinking run in two games against the Royals. But my point with that is, if some of these organizations can make some breakthroughs into keeping pitchers healthy and maintenance and things of that nature a little bit more successfully, then boy, you talk about an advantage that would be right up there with anything else that we've had in terms of discovery or proprietary information. I mean, that would be a big one. So, at this point, I would say I'm not so sure there's any teams that are all that close, considering how many arm injuries we see across baseball, especially this time of year when you're talking about spring training. But I think, again, to bring it back to Batista, you just want to see health. You want to see good mechanics. You do want to see the velocity tick back up, but does it need to be 102 on opening day? No, of course not. In fact, I'm guessing you'd want to see more of a gradual buildup over the next couple months. I'd say this, whatever his average velocity is in July or August, I certainly hope that's higher than it is in April and not the other way around, right? You don't want him to start out throwing at 100 in April if that means he's at 96 in August, and then you're saying, okay, is there something going on? Is his elbow feeling right? Is his shoulder now messed up, right? So,
I do wonder how much they're babying him, right? And that's what my question is a year and a half into this. At what point do the wheels come off and you say, okay, go out and do it again? And if you're John Means, you're John Means. You know what I mean? If you get hurt again, you get hurt again. I don't know where that full strength and that full ability is. You know, I had a knee surgery in 2006. I felt it for 10 years. You know what I mean? Just walking, right? So I don't know. When your mind gets right. I mean, I remember even like Tom Brady having that awful injury that he had. We don't remember that, but in the prime of his career, he had an injury like Flacco did where it just cost him the season. And the next year, it's ginger and it's, am I going to get hit? How am I going to be in the pocket? Or if that's football, baseball, it's man, this can happen at 2 o'clock in the afternoon on a backfield. Just this could happen him grabbing laundry, you know, literally where. It's just it's fragile. And even these big 6'7" guys that look like, Adonises, and they get in the gym and they're doing all the things, and they've had, I wonder how this Humpty Dumpty is going to stay together for the whole thing, not just for him, for all of it, because we talk about all of them in real terms. We're like, Morton, he's 41, he'll be fine. Sugano came over, he throws nothing but strikes, he's going to be fine. Hey, they got Grayson's back, he's just going to be healthy this year, even though he's never really been healthy for a year. So, and then it's where's the workload, to your point? Where's the velocity after the All-Star break versus before the All-Star break, and the ramping up part of this organization trying to get pitching, keep pitching more healthy than it has been? And I don't know that it's anything that's trainable. We talked about things in the Ravens and their injuries a couple of years ago, and how they kind of cut some of that out and they got better at it. All these teams are trying to do that because these are the biggest investments they have. And they didn't even give Corbin Burns $230 million and be worried about his UCLA or UCL or anything going on with his arm. But that's always the biggest concern with all these guys is right now it feels like the water's calm. It's early March. We can talk about all these pitchers, and we certainly have the bats. We haven't even talked about offense at all. I mean, Gunnar Henderson came off the field last week, kind of gave everybody a scare on Twitter. But the pitching is 90% of the game, as Earl Weaver would say, or whatever it would be, that if they don't have the pitching, and we saw this last year, in addition to that, you and I would also say they don't have enough pitching. You and I would still say they're a two or a three at the trading deadline away from being what you would want them to ideally be in October. And that's nothing to do with attrition or Albert Suarez doesn't appear this year or one of the Japanese guys a flop in some way or injured. I don't know that they have deep depth here in that way. And that's why we're going to talk so much about pitching, because any thing that shifts the tectonic plates of what they have. There's no Bradish waiting. There's no Means waiting. All the things we talked about this time last year. The only thing that's waiting now is, oh, we're going to have to deal serious prospects, and Uncle David's going to have to get his checkbook out.
Well, and I will throw out, because you mentioned Bradish. I mean, maybe he's there in August, right? I mean, that's possible. You can't count on that, though, right? I mean, to me, the best, and I'll just say this about Bradish, and then I'll get back
I
to
just
what
don't
we were
think he's
talking.
starting game two of the
Oh,
playoffs in
yeah. No,
October
I
right
think,
now,
to
right?
me, the best case scenario for Kyle Bradish, if we're working within the realm of realistic, good scenarios, right, would be Kyle Bradish gets to the point where he is an option for you in September. And you know what? Maybe he's a guy that is a two-inning opener for you in one of these games, right? And look, we saw the Dodgers throw bullpen games on their way to winning the World Series. So don't tell me it's not possible. But yeah, you're certainly not expecting Kyle Bradish to be taking the ball in game one or game two, even if everything goes perfectly, right? I mean, keep in mind, he had surgery June of last year. So, typically you're talking 12 to 16 months. So 14 months would be August, where he maybe can go on a rehab assignment then. We'll see, right? I mean, who knows? But, there's something you mentioned, and I think this is where it's interesting for Batista. As much as we tend to focus on velocity, because we see that every pitch on the telecast, you see the miles per hour, right, on every single pitch that's televised. At least during the regular season. Spring training, we don't get to see a whole lot of it, and that's another issue for another day. But I think for Batista or any of these pitchers, and you mentioned it, this term, you mentioned the term, and I'm glad you used this word. Babying them, right? And obviously, I know you meant it in a way that was not, you meant it in a way that you're just trying to show some care for pitchers. But I think that's what's so fascinating about all of this is you think about, and not just the Orioles, we're just using the Orioles as an example here. Just about every team does these types of things. But you think about how carefully they manage the innings of minor league pitchers as they're coming up through the system. And you can look at it. It's very systematic. I mean, Grayson Rodriguez, he wasn't throwing 100 pitches per start in the minor leagues. Not even close to that, right? He maybe got up to the point in Norfolk where maybe he was throwing 80 to 85 or maybe hit 90 a couple times in efforts to limit guys' innings. You know what? Right, there had always been kind of a mindset, a loose rule of, maybe you tack on 20 to 30 additional innings per year of development. But What happens when a pitcher gets hurt then? What's that mean for their total innings in terms of trying to manage that? And that's where you look at Batista, and we forget because of what happened. But I'm looking at his numbers right now. Batista, his first year with the Orioles, keep in mind, that was 2022. He kind of came out of nowhere. He threw 65 and two-thirds innings, right? I mean, that's a pretty good workload for a reliever. How many innings did he throw in 23 when he got hurt in late August? Keep it in mind, there were 5.5 weeks to go, 6 weeks to go, somewhere in that neighborhood. He was already up to 61 innings. So he had almost matched his total for the previous year. So how much did that have to do with the injury? It might have had something to do with it, or it might have had nothing to do with it, right? I mean, and that's where I kind of get back to these teams. As much as they try to quantify, as much as they try to use data, there's still so much unknown here. As much as you try to make it science, there's still an art element to this that some pitchers just stay durable. I mean, look at someone like Charlie Morton. He's 41, right? Go look at his career. I mean, not saying he hasn't had injuries, but he's done it for a very long time. You talk about someone like Max Scherzer, who I realize the last couple of years has been hurt, but did it for a very long time. Justin Verlander, I get it. He had Tommy John. It's like what we said. I mean, it's rare now to find pitchers who haven't had Tommy John at some point. But the point is, you have guys like that who, they throw until the arm falls off in their early 40s, right? And they do it for a really, really long time. But then you see pitchers who have Tommy John and at age 23, and even though they might have been a hot shot prospect at some point, they never make it then. So as much as these teams try to have these, I don't know if you'd call it systems, because I don't know if it's a perfect exact science, because in some ways it feels like they're just throwing what at the wall and hoping that it sticks. But as much as you've seen these teams try to manage innings, I'll go back to Grayson Rodriguez as an example of this. As much as they tried to manage his innings in the minor leagues, he still had a couple lat strains here, right? And no catastrophic injuries, but he still has had issues staying healthy, even though they've managed his innings. So that's where you do look at it and say, all right, artificially, deliberately limiting, arbitrarily limiting someone's innings to 150 or 130 or 160 because the guy threw 135 the year before. Is that really? The results would tell you we're not keeping pitchers any healthier than we ever did, right? Because it's worse because of the velocity and the spin they're trying to put on the ball and the movement they're trying to get out of the baseball. So that's a long-winded way of saying I still don't know how much these teams really know what they're doing in terms of keeping pitchers healthy. In terms of maximizing performance when they're out on the mound, yeah. Guys are throwing harder with more break and more spin than ever, but at what cost? And that's where it goes back to your original Batista query and saying, well, if he's only throwing 98, can he still be effective? And who knows? Does that help keep him healthier for the long run? And you know what? That's a completely fair question. The problem, however, is when you have this arms race from team to team, someone is always going to be willing to try to throw harder and spin the ball more and get more break. And that in turn makes it tougher on your hitters, and it's going to make it more difficult for you to win games. So it's that whole, it's basically peer pressure, right? Everyone else is doing it. So in a way, it's almost the new PED dilemma here. Not that these guys are doing anything illegal or against the rules, but is it what's best for the game long term? When you're just seeing these teams just run through pitchers, right? I mean, that's why I said the next great frontier is someone that, and maybe it's not a training technique or a workload management tool. Maybe it's the next version of Tommy John that makes a pitcher only have to miss 4 months compared to 13 months. I don't think, I'm not necessarily saying that's ever going to happen, but that would certainly be a game changer in terms of protecting your investments if you could have a UCL corrective surgery that only kept you out for, say, half a season or 3, 4, 5 months, and you could have it in the off season and still be able to pitch the following year. So is that happening anytime soon? I have not come across any studies that would theorize that, but These teams are trying to figure it out. And to bring it back to on the field from an entertainment standpoint, you kind of go back to, and this isn't a Batista thing, but starting pitching. We've all talked about desiring to see starting pitchers maybe go deeper into games and not having baseball, kind of revert to this bullpen game, bullpenning that we've seen where, the starting pitcher's only going 4 or 5 innings and then you have six arms that come behind. From a performance standpoint, that might be the most efficient way to do it. In some circumstances, is that the most entertaining way to present your game, though? In the same way that we decided to ban the shift, not because teams weren't smart doing it, but because it made for a worse game. It made for a less aesthetically pleasing game. So I don't, you hear all these different, the double hook and people say, okay, well, maybe you have the starting pitcher. If he doesn't go five, a team loses their DH, all these different pie in the sky, rule change ideas to try to promote more stamina for starting pitching. Well, if you're going to do that, then it has to go back to what we talked about. Well, are you willing to sacrifice some velocity? Are you willing to sacrifice some of these other performance metrics in the name of keeping pitchers healthier and able to pitch deeper in the games? It's let's be clear. This is not something that you and I are going to solve in a 45-minute conversation. I mean, these are systemic issues that don't just concern Major League Baseball. You have to go back to the youth level and try to prioritize different elements of pitching than what we're seeing here in 2025.
Well, starting with, you can't throw a curveball till you're 12 or like something like that, right?
Or
So,
16 or
well, what,
17.
yeah, I mean,
Yeah. Not
whatever my
12 is
dad
the
told me.
problem when they're throwing it at 12. Yeah.
You'll hurt your arm. Yeah, you will.
Yeah.
Absolutely. 50 years later, my dad's been dead 32, 33 years. He was right. Dad was right. Luke Jones is here. I am here. He is Baltimore Luke. You can find him out on the interwebs anywhere. We're going to do some football around here this week, non-Justin Tucker related football, although we're going to have plenty of Justin Tucker related football around here this week, as he is still on the team. So Orioles coming north in a couple of weeks. Luke and I will be in Toronto. Passports out. Going to spend a little bit more on the beer, but we're going to drink it with Getty, so it's going to be worth it. Rick Emmett's going to be here later on this week from Triumph, as well as John Palumbo from Crack the Sky. We also had a long chat with Julie Sharper of the Baltimore Banner regarding all of her amazing reporting and journalism on 16 ladies coming forward in the Justin Tucker scandal. I'll be writing a letter to Roger Goodell. Roger's investigating things here this week, so I want to make sure that he knows that I have some information for him. So if you see Roger Goodell, anybody sees any of these investigators, let them know that I'm looking to talk to the NFL. I have an investigation of my own. I am Nestor. He is Luke. Plenty of baseball ahead. We are Baltimore Positive, WNST AM 1570, Towson, Baltimore, and we never stop talking Orioles baseball because 'tis the season.